there. This is episode 8 of Creative Block. My name is Kyle Marshall, and I'm the owner of Media Lab YYC here in Calgary, Alberta, and I feel like I'm such an underachiever. I first met this week's guest, Lori Farley, when she decided to set up shop here at The Bridge, the co-working space that Media Lab is a part of. From the very beginning, I could tell that her mind was constantly rolling through a Rolodex of millions of contacts that she could connect me with. And in this conversation, I discovered that this is one of her passions, connecting people. You'll also discover that it's hard for her to describe all the things she's doing and interested in because she is a multi-passionate person. I can definitely relate. Before we get into our conversation, I should mention that Creative Block is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. Might I suggest, very self-servingly, that you check out one of the newest additions to the network, Putting It Together. One of my many passions is Broadway and theater. Well, this podcast is for Broadway fans in general and Stephen Sondheim fans in particular, where I cover his entire body of work, show by show and song by song. I think it turned out really, really well. You can find all the great shows at albertapodcastnetwork.com. The Alberta Podcast Network is powered by ATB, who just so happens to be our other sponsor this week. And if you're currently listening in Calgary, you know that there has been a chill in the air for the last few days. Winter is on our doorstep. But that also means that hockey season is coming back in full swing. Hockey is a team effort, and ATB wants to be a part of your team. From Tom Thumb and Pee Wee all the way up to the pros, ATB helps sponsor teams across Alberta. So whether you're on the ice or on the bleachers, ATB can all help make hockey possible. For more information, you can go to atb.com/hockey. All right. Let's get into my conversation with Lori Farley. In this conversation, you'll hear about attending university for 9 years, introverted entrepreneurs, and abnormal psychology. Let's go to that now. Lori Farley, thank you so much for joining me here today.
My pleasure.
You know, we've known each other sort of for a little while now. You work out of The Bridge that Media Lab is out of, but I don't know if we've ever actually sat down and had just kind of a big open discussion about you, yourself, and what you've done here in the past. So I think maybe the best place to start is maybe you introducing yourself just a little bit for the audience out there.
Sure. Well, my name's Lori Farley, and I am an entrepreneur. I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit, but I didn't know it for most of my life. And so I sort of operate within 5 pillars in everything that I'm doing, whether it's volunteering, working, supporting the community. And those 5 pillars I call CADET, which is community, arts, disability, entrepreneurship and education, and technology. So I'm always trying to weave all of those things together or make introductions or see opportunities that other people don't see on how those different types of industries or sectors or people can work together. So I've worked on many not-for-profit boards in all those different sectors and for different kinds of businesses and industries. And so I'm always trying to say, well, if I'm working on an arts board, how do they think and how can a technology board benefit from that? So I'm always trying to make those connections.
The acronym is going to be helpful for me to remember those 5 things that you just said. That seems to be a lot of disparate things. How did you get to those 5 specifically that became your pillars?
Yeah, good question. Well, I think it's just because those are the things that I'm interested in. Community is really a big part of who I am, and that's a big part of my family. My dad was a scout leader for over 25 years, and so that sort of being prepared, participating in your community is always civic responsibility is always a big part of who we've been. And I was born as an artist, but I don't really practice as an artist. I might design a t-shirt or a logo for some organization I'm working with. I used to draw and do photography. So I do it sort of as a hobby now. I don't really practice and haven't since university, essentially. Disability. When I was 14 years old, I was babysitting for one of my parents' friends. And there's lots of children with disabilities in the household. So unbeknownst to me, I was working in a specialized foster home for children with developmental disabilities. And when I started working in university during university, those are the jobs I could get because that's the experience I had. I grew up in a rural community, so I didn't really have any work experience education and entrepreneurship. I'm really interested in, I fall in love with people's potential. So if I can help them learn or get connected to the knowledge that they need to do whatever it is they're doing, I'm really fascinated around that. And that's same with entrepreneurship, is if someone has an idea and how do we bring that to fruition? And technology, I'm a groupie and a geek. So I'm interested in technology, not only for what it can do, and how it can support community development, but I'm also staying closely related or connected to advanced technologies for the harm it can create to community and people with developmental disabilities.
Right. Okay. So there's that whole wrapper, I guess, of everything.
So
find itself inside of.
There's a book that I was given called The Power of Focus, which I probably read about 17 pages of. but what I've come to discover about myself is I have focus. It's just really wide. So I don't have laser focus. I have like tractor beam focus.
Right. No, fair enough. Well, let's reel it all the way back. Where were you born?
I was born in Pincher Creek, Alberta.
Oh, wow. Okay. And did you grow up there?
No. I lived in a drawer for a certain number of times for my life there. And then I moved to Calgary, where I lived in a number of places. I only remember an apartment in Malin Heights was the last place I remember living. And I left there before I started preschool. So I must have been around 5.
Right, right.
And then I moved to Viking, Alberta. Home of the Sutters, or if you're into politics, Don Mazankowski, or if you're into cheese, some sort of famous cheese. lived on a farm for K to 12, so 18-ish years, and went to university at University of Alberta for 9 years. And then I moved to Calgary and started my sort of new phase of life in terms of who I was becoming, what I was going to be. Worked 5 jobs for most of my life, anywhere between 3 and 5 jobs. And then 2009, I was laid off from recruiting and started my business, put up my shingle, and that's kind of led me to where I am today.
Oh, okay. So always in Alberta then, though?
Always in Alberta.
Was there ever any desire or pull to go somewhere else?
Well, when I was traveling in Austria, I really loved Austria. That was clean and friendly and just something about it. I thought that would be somewhere where I would want to live, but I've never been drawn to live anywhere else.
What did your parents do then? I guess obviously there was the farm to look after.
Yeah. So my dad was a long haul truck driver. So he wasn't always around. He was always a driver of some kind. He was a taxi driver when I was young in Calgary, from what I know, and maybe a truck driver as well. And my mom was mostly a stay-at-home mom. And she, you know, our farm was more of a hobby farm, and we rented out our land a lot. So other people farmed the properties. But we always had a giant, giant garden. So there was always lots of things to do. Horses, cattle, pigs, geese, things
okay,
like that.
Okay, so the whole thing, I grew up on a farm too, so I kind of know what that lifestyle is like. Mostly cows, but that's that's my background.
Well, I was a petite flower on our farm, so I really didn't have the full farm experience because I was too puny. I'm the smallest person in my family, so like I can't lift, or at that time especially I couldn't lift 5-gallon buckets because I was too short and they were too heavy, so I didn't have to do some of the hard labor chores. You know, I could throw straw bales but not hay bales.
Yeah, no, fair enough. This is something I will sometimes ask, just because I think it reveals a lot about us. Can you recall the first thing you became like obsessed with?
The first thing I became obsessed with? Well, I was really big into horses until I got a car.
So, because then you could go faster.
That's right. And farther. My sister stayed on horses, so it's not totally hereditary. I think my earliest passion, if I really sort of drill into it as, if I don't consider arts or the inventing that I do, you know, that's just part of who I am. But my real passion from very early age has always been supporting people who are on the fringes. So people who aren't included. So people with developmental disabilities is really my passion. And, you know, it's one of those things that for a number of times over the years, I've tried to get away from it because it's hard or I'm fed up or various reasons. But I'm always drawn back in. I have lots of friends and people I know with people that have disabilities of all sorts. I think that's my key calling, is to make sure that if you're standing there alone, that someone's going to go talk to you. And it's probably going to be me, because I just watch around and people don't include people who are on the edges.
You mentioned that you were helping out in a home that had a lot of children that were, I don't know how you termed it, high needs or high?
It was a specialized foster home for children with disabilities, something to that effect.
How did that come about? Like, how did you come to work there?
Well, back in that day, I was only like 12 or 14 years old. So I was babysitting, you know, quote unquote. So that's what I did at that age, you know, is babysitting. So for me, it was just a friend of the family. And one of my brother's school friends also lived there without a disability. And so that's kind of what you do when you're a teenage girl or pre-teenage girl in rural Alberta, babysitting. Or homework, really.
Did you know what you wanted to go to university for?
No, absolutely not. So my mom wanted me to be a vet because I'm really good with animals and I have a caring part about who I am. But I was sort of the first person in my family that did go to university. So I actually didn't know how to go to university. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what the options were. So in fact, when I went to university, my first year was in sciences. And I think I was signed up for medical technician or something like that. And the only reason that I was signed up for that is my best friend, Jackie, her brother picked all of our courses. So I showed up in sciences going, yeah, I love science, love physics, love chemistry, but I can't actually do it.
Yeah. So then what did you switch to?
Well, I actually had a year off, an unplanned year off where I actually went to college for a year.
And, okay. So you went to another school.
Then I came back because I wasn't going to waste a year. You know, I didn't know how to go to school. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know that early in the morning were like math and chemistry labs. So I didn't go because I didn't even know I had them. So I just didn't show up. So, you know, not that I wasn't smart, but it was ill prepared for going to university. So I did a year of early childhood education to fill the time. College was too slow for me. And so I went back to university and started my arts degree.
Oh, okay. What particular area of art, or was it just pretty open, like general art studies?
No, yes and no. So I took graphic and industrial design. So my degree is in graphical industrial design with a minor in psychology.
Okay.
And so.
So you can not just design something, you can tell me what's wrong with me at the same time as you're designing for me.
Yeah, I actually, my specialty in psychology was abnormal psychology, so okay. I can talk to you especially.
No, that's fair. Was there any like a far-reaching goal that you wanted to do with that? Or you're just like, I just need to get this degree and then the rest of my life happens afterwards?
I have literally never known what I want to be when I grow up, even now. So maybe a little bit more now, actually, that I'm actually involved in some projects that could actually, I can see a future far vision. But for the most part, like I said, I went to university for 9 years. So my degree was 4 years. When I went to Europe on one of my trips, they canceled my registration when I was gone and I didn't know. And that was at the time when you had to go to each professor with a piece of paper and register to get into the class. Oh, and this one industrial design guy wouldn't let me back in. And so I had to come back for a full year to finish my degree in industrial design. And I thought, well, I'm not going to come back for one course. So I filled up my course load and I love that. The idea that what I learned in university was really subjective. Like people aren't really learning how to learn. And right. I was actually interested in learning how to learn because of my experience of going to university. Smart in high school, did my homework on the bus. You know, I never learned how to study or do homework or any of that kind of stuff. I just did it and it happened. When I went to university, it was like putting the brakes on, realizing that that opportunity that the teachers had to teach me how to learn was wasted for my whole childhood. Mm-hmm. And so when I discovered that I could take what I want, when I want, how I want, I was really fascinated by the different things that people could learn and why people would be doing things. So I took equine physiology, which is how to feed a horse. I took dance for children. I took Latin for 2 years. Just all sorts of things that I was curious about, which actually didn't help me figure out what I wanted to do. It just made me more curious about all the things that are out there.
Right. It's kind of that problem. There's so much out there. I often think about that nowadays. Because it's just so easily accessible, all the information that you could possibly want. It just wasn't like that when I was growing up. Like, how do you choose now? Like, there's so many different options out there.
Well, I picked five pillars. That's kind of how I choose.
Right. Do you think you would have changed much of anything? Like, looking back now, if you were prepared to going to university, would you have done it much differently than what you did eventually?
Well, I'm going to say no because I don't know. But my guess is I probably would have gone into law or engineering because they would have been more visible options. I think I might have made a good lawyer, potentially in the sense of I have a really strong, wide social justice vein in my body. If you do one of those EQ analysis, my social justice stuff is off the charts and all of my other stuff is quite, I guess, according to EQ, immature.
And you like to argue, I guess, but.
No, I do not like to argue. I like to debate. I like to consider all the options and I like to have some information around why people make their decisions.
Yeah, finding out that why. So you leave university and do you come down to Calgary right afterwards? Or what was the gap between there?
Yeah, so I was in university till I left. I came here, got married and got unmarried. And supporting people with developmental disabilities, children with autism, actually. When I first moved here, I also worked with children with autism in Edmonton. And when I love working with children with autism, and I probably would still be doing that, except the organization I was working with, when I was taking off my 2 weeks to go on my honeymoon, they wanted me to sign all these waivers and affidavits that I was coming back and they weren't going to pay me until such and such and such and such. And I said, I'm just asking for 2 weeks off. So I ended up having to quit because they wouldn't give me my vacation to go on my honeymoon. So then I moved into working with adults with developmental disabilities. Realized that everybody that works with children with disabilities should work with an adult with a disability first, because there's a lot of non-learning that happens for children with disabilities because it's easier and faster not to teach children and just do it for them.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So how long do you work with the adults then?
I'm going to say, so that would have been around, I moved here in 94. I've always been supporting people with developmental disabilities. So even till recently, I was a supportive roommate up until just a couple months ago. So the place that I worked at first with disabilities, with adults, I worked there 7 years straight. That's my longest job I ever had.
Yeah. Just to open this up here a little bit, if there's people listening, and this is honestly for my own education as well. I think that autism is sometimes this huge catch-all word for a lot of different things. Can you sum up maybe just a little bit about what autism actually is? And if we know someone has autism, how can we best interact with those individuals?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to define what autism is just because it's technical, it's a spectrum.
Sure, sure.
So, but essentially, in sort of a generalized way, autism is a communication barrier. So you might have a person whose hearing is super sensitive or their sight is super sensitive. So when I'm looking at you right now, I'm looking at you, but maybe if I have autism, I can see all the specks of dust in the air or super sensitive to touch. Or so now that's pure generalization. So don't take me as an expert in any way. I'm defining what autism is like, but I have friends who have autism who need high supports, and I have friends who have autism that people don't know have autism until they're like, something a little weird about this guy and how he communicates. And
sure.
And so they often, people with autism can't read body language or facial expressions. So now when you meet someone with a person with autism, if you're treating people like you should be treating people as human beings, you shouldn't have to treat anybody differently. So, being friendly and inclusive and not talking down to people and taking the time to listen like we should with everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So not treating them abnormally different than any other person you would meet on the street.
Yeah. Like if someone came up to you and said, hey, Woogie, how's your day today? Or you're so happy. People with Down syndrome. Oh, you're so happy. You're like a child. Right. You know, would you like to be classified in that way? No, you wouldn't. You want to be classified as your own individual, unique self.
Yeah, absolutely. So then I guess what was your desire then, or how did you find out you were this closet entrepreneur that you wanted to start your own business?
Well, I think because I've always had like 3 to 5 jobs, lots of times 5 jobs. And partially that's because I was poor. I was always, broke, and I was working in sort of industries that, where devalued people are. And even when I wasn't, I was working, I worked for a multimedia company that made online books for children. Mm-hmm. Still a space that's not like, you know, that's not where the megabucks are. I never was planning on working for the oil industry. You know, my goal was never to make my money on one side and then on the other side to do the right thing. So for me, it's the same thing. And so having five jobs, and I also volunteer a lot. So I've volunteered as an executive board member, frontline person, every volunteer position you could ever have, I've had it in hundreds of organizations. And so when you come with all this, these different types of experiences in all different types of industries, meeting all different types of people at all different times of their lives, and having all sorts of different types of skills and needing all sorts of different types of help, because I'm a connector and a collaborator, I can see how those things can be weaved together. And so starting my career as an entrepreneur wasn't actually my idea. That entrepreneurial spirit was in me. You know, I used to be in the machine shop as a kid trying to figure out how can I make a wagon out of bicycle wheels and this whatever, you know. And so my last sort of career was in recruiting. Mm. And so the bust came in 2008. I was laid off late 2008. I was given a year's severance, and so I had to decide, shall I get another job? Shall I switch careers? Shall I go work for the government? Should I become an educator? Should I start my own business? And umpteen options.
Right.
And so because I had that year and my experience supporting people with disabilities, here's the interesting thing about my philosophies around entrepreneurship. Supporting a person to have a good life is exactly the way I support an organization to have a good life. So if you're a not-for-profit, a charity, a civic group, an entrepreneur, it's the skills that I have are the same. So basically it's around putting you, the entrepreneur, at the center, or you, the organization, at the center, you, the person with a disability, at the center, and then creating the resources and the community around that. So you might need some funding, you might need a lawyer, you might need whatever you need. Because I've been involved in so many different industries and spaces, I know lots of those people. And so I can make connections really easily. And my mind is a Rolodex. When you're talking to me, I'm like, who does Kyle need to know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've probably seen that happen.
Oh, yeah. You almost see like your eyes flickering in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when I put out my shingle in 2009, I went to a Myers-Nurse-Penney self-employment program, which wasn't for me. And it was part of, you know, I had to go on EI to do it, which I didn't really need to do. And you had to be starting a business. And I didn't fit the profile for someone who would go to Momentum, even though I think my business would have been better served to be started through Momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I put out my shingle to say, I'm starting a business, my network said, oh, Lori's free and she's starting a business. And so here, I'm going to be a client. So I actually had to, for that year I was in that program, I had to rein in my clientele because I could only make so much money. Otherwise, I'd have to pay the government the cost of this course I was taking. Right. And so
it's like the problem that no one else has and probably in that system.
Yeah. And so I was, I had clientele right away. And,
what was the actual business?
My business was originally intended to be a conduit or a bridge between how not-for-profits talk together and how businesses talk to each other. So how do, when you're trying to create a sponsorship or a relationship or a partnership between a not-for-profit or a business, what's the language that everybody needs to be talking to understand each other? And back then, that's, you know, corporate social responsibility wasn't a big thing. And
right,
so people
right.
weren't thinking about that, those types of things. So it kind of morphed into me being more into supporting. My niche was supporting very small not-for-profits, social enterprise, civics groups, and startups around governance, strategic planning, board development, volunteer recruitment, event management, customer engagement, everything that you, an executive director, would be doing for any kind of business or organization. I did it on a super mini scale. So I worked a minimum of 2 hours a month to a maximum of 10 hours a month with any given client at any given time. And had a few like big projects, or I might do a big strategic planning session or a big bylaw policy review for some organization. But the bulk of my time was spent working with organizations on the fringes. They don't have the help. They don't have the support. Usually it's a very grassroots board. So supporting those organizations to become strong, a good life, by working myself out of a job. So once they had the financial resources to hire somebody, they can hire an executive director, or we've created the committee structure and governance structure where they can do the work themselves, then they didn't need me anymore. I could move on to the next thing. And so when I was let go in 2009, and what I found on EI is I was making way less than half of what I was making. And I discovered, well, if I can live on half of what I'm making, why am I working so much? So that's when I decided I'm only working half the time. So my business was designed around working 20 hours a week, volunteering 20 hours a week, and being involved in my community with my friends for 20 hours a week. That's kind of how I structured my life from 2009 till just very recently. And so that way of structuring myself created super uber work-life balance.
Right, I bet.
Which was made me available to be more knowledgeable about entrepreneurship and the different connections and the tech. You know, connecting people is really what entrepreneurs need, and that's the school and the tools and the tips and tricks that I've created for myself. And so that's just how it kind of happened.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the biggest surprise then going off by yourself?
My biggest surprise was the fact that I had clients right away. And if I was at max capacity and one of my clients moved on, or I was finished with one of my clients, I would just say, oh yeah, one of my clients is, and I would have another client. So I literally never learned how to market myself. So marketing for me is terrible. Like I've never been good at it. I'm not sure what year it was, but I sponsored a conference because I was making almost $100,000 working 20 hours a week, working very small amounts of times with very small organizations. And so I thought, oh, well, I'm going to give back to the community. I'm going to sponsor, get involved in different ways and, you know, use my money wisely. For me, it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a non-learning piece for me that I actually had to learn later how to market, how to plan, how to be more strategic in my own business. Because I was supporting all sorts. That's what I was, strategic, governance. That's what I was helping other organizations do. But I guess those who can't teach, no, I'm not sure how that works. But, you know, doctors don't follow their own advice. That's kind of what I was wasn't doing all the things that I was doing supporting organizations to. I wasn't doing it for myself.
So how about now? What are you up to now? I know that's a very broad question. And knowing you, there's like 20 different things that you're actually doing right now. But narrow that down as much as you want.
Yeah. So most people see what I do as quite nebulous. Because I have five pillars, it really is all connected. And I see the connections that are high level connections. So a number of the projects that I'm involved in are, for example, right now, which you're aware of, here at the Bridge in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, we are launching an Impact Hub. An Impact Hub is a global network of entrepreneurs with co-work space and maybe some programming and content around building strong businesses in the social enterprise space. And a social enterprise is a business that has social impact built into its business model. And so we want to support social enterprises who are a subset of the startup sector here in Calgary, who are a subset of the economic development that we have here in Calgary and in Alberta. And the startup community is quite immature here, and it's not well supported. We've been under the thumb or under the umbrella or under the gloom of the energy industry for a long time. So the innovation startup here in Alberta has been a little bit stunted. And so for people who have social impact as part of their business model, there's extra barriers to being able to start those kind of businesses. So we're in the process of building some supports and ecosystem around that within the ecosystem of economic development.
So how would once the Impact Hub is here, how would someone apply, or what would be the best candidate to come and be part of Impact Hub?
Yeah, so we were just onboarding last week. So we will know sometime in September, December, will be a full Impact Hub. I'm crossing my fingers, knocking on wood as I'm saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's my head is the wood, but
that's funny. The entrepreneurs who we will be supporting, or who, if they want support, would come to us. So any entrepreneur can go to any incubator, accelerator, and get business development support. There's two challenges to that. One, if you're like me, when I was going through Myers & Nurse Penny, that was a program that was designed for if you're building a widget or opening a restaurant and you're creating these assets or needing assets, money for those types of things, or the type of business that you're creating, there's lots of resources for that. But if you're trying to support global impact, local impact, our business world doesn't get that. And so there's lots of barriers to starting those types of businesses. So if you have a business that you know, or you self-identify as a social entrepreneur or social impact business, come to us. We will want to support you. Our website isn't fully up now, so but Impact Calgary is our impactcalgary.com is our interim website. It's a sparse right now because we're so close to becoming an impact hub. We may or may not continue developing that website. But you can talk to me, Lori Farley. My email address, shall I give it out?
Yeah,
is Lori@impactcalgary.com. We're going to be offering lots of workshops around what it is to be an impact hub. We support the community as well. Anybody who's in the social enterprise space, the social impact space, the activist space, there's a number of activists out in Calgary. We have actually a very strong activist network here in Calgary, activists who are trying to change the world. If we can support some entrepreneurial thinking around those things.
Mm-hmm.
So Impact Hub is sort of who we are or will be. We're also a local chapter of Open IDEO. There's other things that we're building and creating. We're right now focusing in September coming up will be a brain health. So, for example, entrepreneurs are at higher risk of mental health related issues compared to the rest of the population, partially because we're prone to thinking differently and we don't live as structured lives as most people. And sure. We're also grinding away at starting something with no help and no possibility of a future until it suddenly takes off, you know, those types of things. And so we're launching.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Does anybody else out there have no idea what we're talking about? Yes, I'm speaking sarcastically. Yeah, so we want to support. So within our Impact Hub, we want our entrepreneurs to be healthy. And so brain health is a part of that. And so mm-hmm. we're bringing in a presenter who's just moved here from Vancouver, and he's connected to the Hunter Center for Innovation at the University of Calgary. And we want to hear from entrepreneurs who need help, want help, or somebody who needs help. How can we do that? Now, we're not going to be offering psychologists or any kind of psychological mm-hmm. Assessments per se, but we will be creating some community around entrepreneurs supporting themselves and having access to the supports that they might need through the mental health networks here in Alberta or Canada.
That's great.
Yeah.
So pie in the sky, a year from now, what do you hope that Impact Hub is looking like here in Calgary?
Well, we have a couple of options. Is that we are here at the Bridge, and we are a vibrant, thriving community where people are of all ages, genders. We don't discriminate. We support parents who are entrepreneurs. We want to support any sexual orientation of people who are starting to start businesses, no matter what quadrant of the city you live in. We want to be able to help have people feel welcome in this space, supporting the businesses that they're trying to create. So that's one option, thriving here at the Bridge. We also have a future dream of moving to a new, bigger space,
mm-hmm.
Which we had the plans moving forward to, and the city has now sort of adjusted the use of that space that we might go into.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have our eye on that spot. We're partnering with the organization that's going to be controlling that spot, and we have another few options in our back pocket in case that doesn't work out.
Hostile takeover, but
darn it, social entrepreneurs don't think that way.
No, I know.
Maybe we have a partner that can do a hostile takeover in a really social justice way. The ethics around what we do is really important to us. Yes. So Impact Hub here, whether it's here at the Bridge or wherever it's going to be in Calgary or in whatever hubs we create, we're hopefully having conversations right now to create some sort of partnership with economic development in Turner Valley. So rural entrepreneurship, from a rural background, is really important to me. How do we utilize tech to support all kinds of entrepreneurs and businesses? So how does an entrepreneur who's got a social impact business and a tech business who's trying to do something good for the world, how can we introduce them? So they can each run their business separately, they can each scale separately, but we can create opportunities for bringing those two together and create some really cool, strong scaling and opportunities that wouldn't have existed if they didn't know each other. So we're really about creating partnerships for different mm-hmm. kinds of organizations.
How about you as an individual, you, Lori, what do you want to be doing in a year from now?
Well, Impact Hub is really the philosophies around Impact Hub and the sort of collaborations, partnerships. That's who I am. If anyone's familiar with Rainforest and the social contract out there, those are just written down versions of who I am. And so me as an Impact Hub, I see myself in a year keep in mind, nobody knows this. I'm going to give you a secret.
Okay.
Sure. I'm an introvert, highly introverted. I'm an INTJ on Tribute. So I'm like, what, 0.3 of the population or something like that, or 0.03 of the population. INTJ female. That means I'm introverted. I'm focused. I'm not good at communicating. Maybe I'm on the autism scale in that department. Who knows how that works? But I do see myself in this space, in an impact hub, as the center connector collaborator, where I can be really hyper connecting people without actually being a person who's connected to people, because I'm not really actually really good at that. Most people don't know that, because I have a giant toolkit and a whole bag of experience behind me where I've created this sort of persona around who I am as an extroverted introvert, essentially, is kind of what I've developed. And so
I find that a lot with a lot of the entrepreneurs that I've met here in the city, where everyone like presents themselves in a certain way because they know that's kind of how the game is played. But it's like, for me too, being a supreme introvert, it's like going to a networking event for an hour and a half. It's like, I have to go have a nap because it's too much. I've had too much stimulation here for today.
Well, I'd like to see in the comments section of this blog, if there is one, about how many entrepreneurs out there are introverts. I'm very curious about that now, because now that you mention it, and maybe it's because I'm also connected to the tech sector, and you're a little bit connected to the tech sector, but I'm also connected to the art sector. So, but the entrepreneurial piece, is it the gregarious people, or is it the people that, I'm curious.
Yeah. Someone needs to run a social experiment of some kind.
It wouldn't be unlike me to ask the question why. It's probably what I drove my mom crazy my whole life, because I can't just do it. I have to know why.
Yeah. Give me the why. So to break it down here, sometimes I like to ask this as we wrap up. If there was someone coming to you who was trying to break in, they have this great business idea, or they're coming from art school and they're going to try and make a living out of making their art, what is the advice that you would give to them?
Well, there's a couple of advices that I can give. One of the main ones is that don't be afraid of sharing your idea. People are trying to keep their ideas to themselves because they don't want people to steal their idea. I've had like 900 amazingly unique, super, these are going to change the world ideas. And then I Googled them and somebody already had it. So like, seriously, the chances of your idea being totally a unique idea is pretty far-fetched these days. Unless you have some unique patentable way of doing something, you should be sharing your ideas. So for a couple of reasons. One, because if people know your ideas, well, number one, if the universe knows that you're ready to work on your idea, the resources and the universe will provide, it's going to come to you, the resources that you need. The second thing is that when you're talking about your ideas, they become more real. So for example, I have a future vision of a retreat center where I have it in my mind. It's designed so that we can curate all these different kinds of opportunities and people doing their thing, but a curated way for them to meet then when they're on their breaks and stuff. So that's in my mind. But when I said that out loud about 2 years ago, it's been in my head for over 10 years.
Sure.
I said it out loud a couple of years ago, and like literally, someone mentioned to me, someone's got land and someone's now helping me do this and do this.
People are trying
and
to help you out.
I said it out loud to one person, and like within weeks, it was already moving into something real. So that's 2 years ago now. And we actually really now have a plan for how that can happen. And some of that has to do with the rural entrepreneurship piece that I have in my life, is because we're connecting with somebody in rural BC who's helping rural locations create tech hubs. So now we're going to be partnering potentially a tech hub with a retreat center, which was going to just make it, it's just going to make it happen. I can now see that it's going
to
happen.
And I'm super excited. It's like that manifestation is just, as soon as you start to say it, it starts to kind of come.
That's right.
Come and be real. It also reminds me, there's Gary Vaynerchuk, whether you love him or hate him, says like, I have no problem telling all my ideas to people because I know 99% of you are not going to do a thing about
it. That's right. Yeah, no, that's actually true. Yeah. And lots of the people who have ideas, they're not going to do anything about it either.
Yeah.
So I connect with people who have ideas because I'm an activator. So you have an idea. Mm-hmm. I can come to, if you tell me your idea, I might be able to enhance it, or I might be able to connect you to somebody that can make that happen. Because if you're not going to use it, you can partner with someone who can use it. Then your idea happens. You don't have to do all the work, but still you're a founder or whatever, right?
Right. All right. Well, let me go and tell you all my ideas now.
Go.
Thank you so much for joining me here, Lori.
My pleasure.
Well, there you go. Thanks again to Lori Farley for talking with me. You can also visit intonovus.ca. That's spelled intonovus.ca to see more ways that Lori helps support cross-sector social and economic development. Thanks for listening. Creative Block is available everywhere you can get podcasts. So if you've been enjoying the conversations, leave a review wherever you're listening to it. You can also share it with other people. We'll be back again next week. Have a great day.